The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
There's a lot of people running their mouth that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out.
Brandy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to be here today.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and getting with us as we get rolling here through some of these technical fun things about the remote nature of our business. And I was writing down your title, and I think it's the first time I've seen technology and engineering in the same title. And I kind of laugh because at the beginning of this year, it came announced that I'm now known as the Chief Intention Officer for the Crude Life as we get through this ESG movement and try to get to some of these ESG roots and environmental and technology is the one that caught my eye with you, because the second story we did actually in the Bakken, where I know you're going to have a representative later this week at the EPIC conference, is it's not an oil boom, it's a technology boom. And what we're talking about today is one of those technologies that is starting to see itself in oil and gas, and one of the ways to get oil out of the ground and to figure out new ways to, enhance energy, if you will. I don't even know about getting oil out of the ground is the correct way to rephrase that and what we're talking about here today. But that's one of the examples people are having. So anyway, I kind of got into a long introduction here a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about what it is that your title brings to the energy spectrum, if you wouldn't mind, before we get into what you guys do and what some of these carbon solutions are.
Sure. So the reason for the technology and engineering in my title is that I have full responsibility for our development of new technologies to support our customers, especially around decarbonization. And the engineering piece is because I still have full responsibility for all of our engineering operations supporting our projects that are currently underway. So that's how I get to the both technology and engineering piece.
Let's talk about the company itself, Babcock, and explain that a little bit, the overview of maybe elevator pitch, if you will. We'll kind of dissect that a little bit more in the interview, but kind of company, how long it's been around, what you guys do, et cetera.
Sure. Babcock & Wilcox was founded in 1867, and we are currently headquartered in Akron, Ohio. We are a global leader in energy and environmental technologies and services for the power and industrial markets, and we have operations worldwide. We have a strong focus on clean, renewable energy technologies, decarbonization, carbon capture, hydrogen generation, and we continue to support our traditional fossil fuel-fired steam generation and environmental needs of our customers from both a new build and an aftermarket perspective. We also provide field engineering support and construction services. We have a long history of providing technologies and services to the oil and gas industry. That includes CO boilers, as well as other steam generation technologies, boiler cleaning systems, and environmental solutions. And in addition, we even do turnaround scope development, field engineering support, and construction services, especially for our U.S. and Canadian oil and gas customers.
Mentioned fossil fuels, and then, of course, specifically oil and gas. Anything in coal, too? I know coal is big with the carbon sequestration and the carbon capture and everything.
Of course, we have a huge history in coal. We're one of the leading coal-fired boiler suppliers around the world, and we continue to service our coal-based fleet for our customers from an aftermarket perspective.
See, I think that's a really important point right now in today's climate, because just the uncertainty of the marketplace and just some of the implementation of technologies, there's a lot of similarities with coal. More formulaic, I think, than anything, but it's definitely there. And are you seeing any similarities at all?
Oh, absolutely. And most of the technologies that we're developing today can be used for our coal-based customer fleet, as well as oil and gas customers. So we're really working hard to develop technologies that can work for whatever the fuel is that you have and you need to burn to make energy.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. Just kind of a layman's terms a little bit. You know, we're talking about carbon capture, and then I've also seen like CSUS, I think it is. There's all these acronyms going around with the word carbon and capture, sequestration. Is that all the same thing, or are there differences?
Yeah, it's really all the same thing, right? Carbon capture, it's the isolation of the carbon dioxide at the source before it enters the atmosphere. And when you see the CCUS, sometimes it's just CCS, it's carbon capture utilization and storage, or just carbon capture and storage. So when they talk, when you see that piece, they're really talking about the entire value chain, right? From isolating the carbon dioxide to either beneficially using it or sequestering it and storing it permanently. You know, for the oil and gas industry, really, storage often means utilizing the CO2 for enhanced oil recovery. So I would say that most people don't really distinguish between those terms and for the most part use them interchangeably.
Okay. And when we're talking, I know there's a lot of different ways for carbon storage. I mean, some people, water and trees and pipelines and underground tanks and all kinds of different things. What are some of the ways that you guys are integrating that in the world of oil and gas or energy?
Right. So we have a complete climate bright suite of technologies that we've developed and have available for our customers. And really we focus on the capturing piece of the CO2 at the facilities and then help walk with them and work with them on the journey to what are they going to do with it from a storage perspective. But on the capture piece, we have several technologies. We have the SolveBright technology, which is a regenerable solvent technology for post-combustion carbon capture. So if you think about a boiler that you use today where you're burning coal or natural gas or oil, you can put a SolveBright on the back of that to capture that CO2 and give you the stream that you can then compress and send for storage. Then we also have OxyBright. And that's a combustion process that uses pure oxygen for combustion instead of air. So when you don't have the air and you don't have that nitrogen stream, you get a pure stream of CO2 for utilization. Again, so that makes, now you don't have to have the post-combustion capture, right? You get that pure stream of CO2 through the combustion process. We also have BrightGen, which is hydrogen combustion technology. So if you have an existing boiler and you have a resource of availability of hydrogen, you can burn the hydrogen in your existing boiler, and that does not clearly produce any CO2. And finally, we have our revolutionary next-gen technology, which is BrightLoop. And BrightLoop is a chemical looping technology. And with BrightLoop, we can produce hydrogen or steam or even syngas from a variety of different fuels or feedstocks. And in this process, we isolate that CO2, and then it can be sent for capture or industrial purposes. And, you know, for the oil and gas industry especially, they are really interested in the BrightLoop because we have the potential to utilize the petcoke, which is a waste stream, as well as we can use natural gas or even biomass to create hydrogen. And then they can utilize the hydrogen in their processes. So that's really some of the technologies that we have on the carbon capture side of things.
To listen to the full-length interview, visit thecrudelife.com.
Never should a joker catch my eye, but I looked over and I caught some feelings. Saw a couple things that I really liked, but you got caught up in the big daydreaming. It's what you don't say. It's like a pretty black Cadillac with no brakes. It's like a girlfriend.
Hope you are going to want to act today on this limited special from MyPillow. Check it out. A $70 pillow, now only $20. That's right. The standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. You'll also receive deep discounts on all the other MyPillow products as well. The MyPillow towels, the topper, the slippers. It is all on a deep discount with the promo code Otis, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and receive Mike's standard MyPillow for just $19.98 or call 800-598-4268. That's 800-598-4268. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. And do not forget to use the promo code Otis.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
I never let the Joker out my sight. Never went broke on an all or nothing. Never made a bet so out of line. Till I met you and I hit the ground running. And I must say,
let's go to the phone line where we've got Colorado State Senator District Number 7. Ray Scott on the line with us. That's the Grand Junction area. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Now, which part? No, it's Grand Junction. Are you outside of there? Do you go to Frutia and Rifle and all that good stuff too?
Well, Mesa County is the county that I represent, which is pretty much Grand Junction, Fruta, Palisade, Colorado. We have about 150,000 people in a district, so that kind of encompasses just one county over there, Mesa County.
And about 150 national parks, too.
Yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, we are like the national park for the country.
That's the one thing I remember is right when you drive through that mountain on, is it I-70 that runs across?
Yep.
The? Okay, so you drive through the mountain, and that's when you start hitting, you know, Vail, Aspen, Rifle, that sort of thing.
Yep.
I just, it seems like every other sign is a national park sign. Just...
We are blessed with a whole lot of those. It's a beautiful state. There's no question.
Is it Hanging Fish Lake? Is that the name of it?
It's called Hanging Lake. It's in Glenwood Canyon.
Okay, yeah, that's gorgeous. Oh,
that's just awesome in there.
All right. Well, I'll get out of my daydreaming now, and now I'm thinking about having a nice little sack lunch by the river going through Rifle at this time. That's another nice place to stop off and enjoy the outdoors. But let's talk about Grand Junction here and some of the, well, now you've got natural gas out there primarily, correct? There's no oil drilling?
Yeah, if you kind of look at Colorado, we've got the Rocky Mountains, as you know, that goes right pretty much down the center of the state of Colorado. Everything west of the Continental Divide is mostly natural gas. Everything east of the Continental Divide is oil and natural gas, of course. But
and then
we have associated natural gas that comes off of oil on the eastern plains.
And then when you go north up into Wyoming, that's natural gas up there too in the Powder River. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, there's oil and natural gas up there also.
Yep. Well, that's right. They've got some oil up there too. That's right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then, of course, you go to the east side in Weld County where Greeley, that's where the oil and gas activity is in Colorado. The BLM office, is that in Grand Junction? Is that right? The national BLM office?
Yes, sir. Now, the Biden administration has curtailed that somewhat.
Oh?
They've made some changes since Biden took over. There's still going to be a regional director there, but it won't be quite what we had hoped it would be.
Now, do they work with the EPA in Denver pretty closely, or is that outside of your pay grade and jurisdiction?
No, they do.
Okay.
They do.
Okay. Well, you know, on the other side of the state and the Rockies and the in between, who knows? I mean, who knows nowadays? I mean, I've got a brother that lives in the same town as me. I haven't seen him for 6 months.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you think about Colorado also, about 70% or more of our land west of the Continental Divide is federal land.
Oh.
When you go east, back out towards Greeley that you were talking about, that's all private.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so that's, of course, why the Western Energy Alliance is so active with the federal land talks and that sort of thing. I saw Catherine Scama was testifying either today or tomorrow on behalf of the Western states. And so let's use that as a transition to get into what you were a part of today. Now, you're actually in session in Colorado. It started January 12th, so we're about a week in, a little bit over a week in with the session. And today you actually had a oil and gas testimonies, symposium? What was today all about?
Well, what happens here in Colorado is by statute, each agency has to come before the legislature and report on their activities. So, yes, we had the opportunity to have the Department of Natural Resources, which, of course, includes oil and gas. They came in and testified on their activities over the last year or so. And what they look forward to in the future.
What do they testify on? When I think of, you know, what the industry promotes, it's the taxes, it's the jobs. And when I think of what the opposition, and I do say opposition because the governor has said war on oil and gas, which is, that's an interesting rhetoric statement to make for a governor, when a lot of the taxes and a lot of the jobs and a lot of the humanity is oil and gas. But like I said, the opposition, they're very much firing bullets and daggers and that sort of thing. What does this government agency or this representative, what kind of stuff do they report to you?
Well, basically, they talk to us about revenue.
Okay.
They talk to us about a lot of the regulations they're trying to put in place.
Okay.
They've been doing rulemaking here in Colorado since what was called Senate Bill 181 was passed a couple years ago. So that has really been a lot of rulemaking. And you've probably heard this before, that Colorado has the toughest oil and gas regulations in the country. And, of course, under this administration, of course, there's much more that they want to do because, in their mind, oil and gas can kind of go away and unreliable energy sources like wind and solar can take its place. Well, you and I know that's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. And it's a lot of political posturing, quite frankly, for the electorate out there. They're pandering for votes for their next cycle in November of this year. So we, you know, of course, then we get an opportunity to ask questions, which we do, to try to understand just what's happening with the oil and gas industry. And there was some pretty alarming statistics that came out of this. What we call a Form 2A, which is basically a drilling permit application. Just to put it into perspective for you and your listeners out there, Colorado had 447 permits approved in 2018. I asked how many have we approved in 2021, and it took a while for them to answer, but they finally answered 10. That would be 10. Our data actually shows that they've only approved 5. So you go from that level of activity to where we are today, and it's very damning for the oil and gas industry.
How does that ripple into other industries? We're talking about in North Dakota, I've been very vocal about how, you know, they kind of put their eggs into one basket. Somewhere 55-60% of the state general fund budget was dedicated to the two oil and gas taxes. And I know Colorado, there's a lot of businesses downtown Denver.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it has a very far-reaching impact. There's absolutely no question about that.
Does that come up during these sessions at all? Do they bring up what the educational economic impact would be or anything like that?
Well, you know, what's funny is we actually bring it up because we want to talk about those things, right?
Because you guys are doing your job, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, and our opposition is talking about climate change and how wonderful and the nirvana we're going to live in.
Yeah.
You know, when states around us are doing, as you know, the oil and gas industry does a great job of policing itself on the environment. I can tell you this, in Colorado, we've lost close to 10,000 jobs in a couple of years, which, you know, that equates into about $300 million in revenues. So, and that affects everything. Schools, that affects fires, special districts. It affects hospital funding, sewer and water funding. It's caused a lot of trouble here. And you brought up the land trust, which, as you know, you feel back Congress, or Thomas Jefferson actually set that up when we became states out here. Now, I don't know about North Dakota. I'd have to look at the percentages, but down here, only 12% of the trust lands are actually producing. Well, I don't know if that's enough to feed what K-12 education really needs. And I think over time, that's going to cause some problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. I think there's... And what I found about government, and you're a government employee, a state senator, if you will, there's not a lot of cuts that get done. So when the budget gets up there, and all of a sudden if the revenue gets dropped, they'll just raise taxes. I mean,
the only thing that saved, I think, a lot of states is the federal stimulus money that came in.
Sure.
Yeah. And they're relying on that still, which I think is a dangerous proposition.
Have a question? Know an expert? Or just want your voice heard? Email studio at thecrudelife.com.
Look, you know what ain't right. So what you doing now? Calling me at midnight. I've done nothing but giving you the good life. I mean, I really would have been a good wife. But keep singing my praise, saying I'm mad to you. I'll keep in my name and kicking this happen. Cause I was all in the minute I found you. And when it's too crowded.
Folks, you are going to want to act today on this limited special from MyPillow. Check it out. A $70 pillow, now only $20. That's right. The standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. You'll also receive deep discounts on all the other MyPillow products as well. The MyPillow towels, the topper, the slippers. It is all on a deep discount. Discount with the promo code Otis. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and receive Mike's standard MyPillow for just $19.98 or call 800-598-4268. That's 800-598-4268. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. And do not forget to use the promo code Otis.
For more than 100 years, First International Bank and Trust has been headquartered in western North Dakota, home of the Bakken. Our proven record of mineral management, appraisal, and brokerage services is now enhanced by the only Bakken-specific software, Mineral Tracker. Trust First International Mineral and Land Services and Mineral Tracker to protect your interests and help build and preserve a financial legacy for generations to come.
The Crude Life with Jason Spies.
You remind me that I'm not in control. I'm out of control, man. You know I think that I'm better alone. But you're keeping me open. And what I see and you were sitting there door. You already know that.
Coming to you a block away from the Sherpa Grill. We're here at Aunt Helen's Coffee Shop. And by the way, Aunt Helen, thank you for allowing us to sit down with Tara Norris Rasmussen. She is the publisher of the Greeley Lifestyle Magazine. Of course, many people out there are wondering, what is Greeley? I've heard of Greeley. Of course, in the oil and gas world, it's Weld County, which is a very large oil and gas producing county. You go over to the western side is where you get a little more of the natural gas in the Grand Junction Frutia area. But right here in Greeley, Colorado, we've got a lot of agriculture from sheep to cattle to grains and crops. We'll say crops. We'll call them by the actual word, crops. Greeley has got so many different economic avenues. You would be impressed by the quality of life that is here. And so when I saw the Greeley Lifestyle Magazine, I was really excited. So I reached out to the publisher, and her name is Tara Norris Rasmussen. It used to be Rasmussen, but she's recently married. And
used
then I
to
found
be,
out.
Used to be Norris, recently married to Rasmussen.
Oh, did I? Dyslexia of him?
Yes.
Yeah, I do that. I have dyslexic interviews at times. So I don't read that way. I just have the interviews that way. So I apologize. So Greeley Lifestyle Magazine, I thought this was a very appropriate magazine because when I think of an oil and gas community, the oil and gas companies focus so much on the community quality of life. And when I found out you actually used to be in oil and gas, I thought, well, what a natural progression for you because so many people in oil and gas want their story told.
Yes.
And what better way to tell it than through a magazine, through print, which goes online. And once it's online, then you can do a number of different things from video to audio to
whatever, you know, get into social media, a number of different things. But so that's a little preview of what we're going to talk about. But how are you doing here today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to not only share what we're doing with the magazine, but kind of talk about that, the bridge between oil and gas and Greeley lifestyle, which is a really neat story in itself.
What was your background in oil and gas? You were a land man, aka land woman, aka land negotiator, depending yes. on which circle we're in today.
That is correct.
So talk to me a little bit about your background in oil and gas.
Yeah, so I started out at the bottom answering phones 10 years ago in the oil and gas industry, and really just worked my way up. I studied petroleum land management at Oklahoma City University so I could learn the industry while I was, I got a little internship with a little group called Tecton Energy down in Highlands Ranch, and they had a project here in Windsor, Colorado. And so I worked the Windsor project. I ended up working on the Windsor project with three different companies. And after, you know, I kind of went cradle to grave on this Windsor project and then moved to the Uinta Basin in Utah, worked the Uinta Basin for a few years and ended up back in Greeley.
When you say Windsor project, are we talking Windsor, Colorado?
Windsor, Colorado,
just
yes.
A
just
few
down the
stone's
street.
Throw from
yes,
there.
Still okay. in Weld County.
One of the names I remember, of course, when I was in my publishing days, mostly because the Windsor, the alcohol drink. Oh, yeah, you didn't know that, but
no.
I used to do a magazine here in Greeley, Colorado with the newspaper. We did a home and lifestyle magazine, a kind of a building, decorating, landscaping, and remodeling. And
awesome.
That was in my former publishing days.
I
and
would
so,
love to see it.
I saved one copy of each magazine I did, and we had partnerships with 52 newspapers across the United States.
Wow.
So we did 48 magazines in 45 days during the fourth quarter before Christmas holiday edition.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had to stagger them out, you know, because every newspaper, they had to get them in, you know, because uh-huh. everybody does a holiday edition.
They do.
You
yes,
know that.
That's a big
so,
one.
okay, so let's talk a little bit about the transition. We had somebody on last year that really stands out in my mind. He was with, his name is Mike Renfrow. Blue Boat Subsea. So he had been in oil and gas for 28 years. 100% business in oil and gas. COVID hits. Him and his business partner decide that they're going to do some wind and renewable RFQs or RFPs.
Mm-hmm.
Still do the same oil and gas ones. Well, in 1 year, their business went from 100% oil and gas to 20% oil and gas, 80% wind, because
wow.
that's where the money was. That's
mm-hmm.
where the marketplace directed. He
Absolutely.
Did offshore.
Oh, wow.
And his 20% oil and gas was decommissioning pipelines.
Oh, wow.
So here he's putting out the doomsday of these are all European companies and, you know, all that
uh-huh.
other stuff. But, you know, when I thought about that, that really hit home to me. We had talked to a few other people. A couple went into real estate. Another one went into law enforcement. That one was interesting because that one made a lot of sense to me.
Yes,
coming
absolutely.
From going from oil and gas to law enforcement, real estate, of course, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to hear more and more of these stories. What's your story from petroleum to publishing?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in the industry. My dad's a geologist, and so I've watched my entire life the ups and the downs of the industry. You know, and I saw a lot of people leave, and I always felt really sad that they had to leave oil and gas. But now I feel so much gratitude having, you know, transitioning out of the oil and gas industry. Now I can look at it through a different lens, and I have so much gratitude for the things that I learned within the industry, and I see that other people have done the same thing. So many incredible experiences and opportunities that industry has afforded me and people just like me that we now get to take and move and use those tools and use those lessons and those experiences as we transition to other industries. So now I look at it in a very positive way. Oil and gas industry was such a gift for me, and I see for other people as well. Instead of it being a sad thing, it's just really it's a story of gratitude and a story of opportunity, really. So for me, you know, I loved every moment in the oil and gas industry. I had such incredible experiences that I never expected, and so many doors and opportunities were there for me. And, you know, I never thought I would leave the oil and gas industry. But the opportunity, I was working the Uinta Basin with a small group. There was five of us, a little startup, trying to get money to drill. And we were traveling all over the country, talking to private equity groups and educating people on the Uinta Basin. And we called it the sleeping giant. So much oil in that basin, and no one's really talking about it. And so we were just very excited to be really diving into that basin and seeing the opportunities that were there for us and for others. So unfortunately, the way that that basin, the situation it's in right now, with such a high wax content in the oil over there, that the refineries were really at capacity with no plans to expand and grow. So from a private equity standpoint, that didn't make a lot of sense. No one was wanting to invest in the Uinta Basin at the time, and this was just a couple of years ago. And so, you know, we learned a lot. We had a great time. Now we still, our little company is called Bear Lake Resources, so we still have that. We're just a little tiny non-op, and there's just two of us now. And that's kind of my very, very side gig, very small. We don't spend a lot of time on that little group, but we still kind of, you know, we've hung on to it, and it's a good revenue source for us. So as we wound down Bear Lake Resources and had to realize that we weren't going to get the funding to drill that we wanted, and our big plans were not going to come to fruition, I started to kind of be open to other opportunities. You know, I loved starting at the bottom of the oil and gas industry and really working my way to the top. I found so much joy in that journey. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to look at other industries, see if there's somewhere else that I can start at the bottom and work my way up and have a similar experience of just the joy in the journey, the learning and the growing as a person. And so I came across the opportunity to start a magazine in Greeley. City Lifestyle is a company out of Kansas City. And right now they have 117 magazines across the U.S. And they were looking to have a magazine in Greeley. There's 14 magazines in Colorado. And I got very excited when I saw the advertisement. It was actually on LinkedIn Jobs for this magazine. And it said, you know, at the bottom of the listing, it said, no publishing experience necessary. Like, I'm perfect. I'm perfect for that job. I have no publishing experience at all. But what really spoke to me about the opportunity was, you know, coming out of COVID and everything that we've lived through, people have been so isolated. They've been so isolated from each other and from their communities. And these magazines are helping people feel connected.
To listen to the full-length interview, visit thecrudelife.com.
Because you remind me that you're running the show. You're running my show, man, is the tight man. Why I'm sleeping alone and losing my focus. And what I love and you want something they don't even notice. I just want you to know it's more than emotion. There you are where my heart would rest at home in another life. But in the meantime, I've left behind something that I can't forget. It's short fibers are turning tidy, your fibers are burning bright.
Hey folks, Jason Spies with The Crude Life, and you've all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Well, Mike has another fabulous offer for each and every one of the listeners out there on his standard MyPillow. You'll receive a standard MyPillow regularly $69.98 now for only $19.98. That's less than $20. This holiday season, give the gift of sleep, a good sleep for only $19.98 regularly. $69.98. That's $70 down to $20. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and receive Mike's standard MyPillow for just $19.98. Or call 1-800-598-4268 and use the promo code Otis. That's a $70 pillow down to $20. Go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code Otis.
The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
There's a lot of people running their mouth that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out.
still some of us every night. We make a toast to you, like isn't it nice that somebody had the presence of mind to speak up for you? Let there be light.
When somebody asks you whether you have the capacity to take on some new responsibility, some new task, what is your default reaction? Do you take a deep breath and sigh and say that your plate is already full and you are swamped and there's really no way you could take anything else on right now? Or do you have the opposite reaction where you enthusiastically jump up and down and say, I am ready. What do you got for me? I absolutely can take something else on. Or is it a third, in-between response, if you will, where you say, look, I am busy and, you know, I can move some things around if needed. So, you know, what do you got? What trade-offs are we willing to make so that I can take on this additional project? And well, obviously that third response would be recommended for somebody who wants to give an honest response, a more thoughtful response, and in many cases, a more sustainable response. The reality is that many people fall on one extreme or the other. They fall on the push everything away and just make it clear how busy you are, or show how enthusiastic you are and how you're willing to stretch yourself, which again are typically not the healthiest and most sustainable approaches. And so on today's episode of the Energy Detox, we want to make sure that you answer questions like that more thoughtfully, or more importantly, you carry with you this idea that your capacity at any given time doesn't necessarily reflect the production and the output that you can have, particularly when you enter the quality of that production into the equation. And the second thing that we want to do on today's episode of the Energy Detox is make sure that when you're asking a question like that, when you're asking others whether they have the capacity to take on more or shift responsibilities, that you're doing it in a way that is also conscious and thoughtful. And you're doing it in a way that makes sure that you don't unwittingly set yourself up, set your team up, and certainly set an individual up for failure because you don't recognize that that individual doesn't quite grasp the difference between capacity and production. And to drive today's conversation is a headline this week from the EIA, who pointed out that in 2022, the majority of new electric generating capacity in the United States will come from renewables. In fact, the one headline points out that nearly half of all new capacity will be solar. And again, there's people in commentary and other articles that are championing this as a acceleration, of course, of the energy transition, whereas there are others who are pointing out that capacity, of course, does not equal production. And while today, again, we're going to take an apolitical look at things, we're going to focus on the science, we need to acknowledge that, yes, of course, maximum peak capacity does not equal production. And that is true of any source of energy, right? Whether it's nuclear, which typically is closer to, I think, north of 90% production versus its capacity. The reality is that solar and wind, of course, are closer to, say, 50% because, of course, as is often repeated in talking points, the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. But that being said, the question for you is, are you artificially or unwittingly conflating your capacity with your production ability? Because they are not one and the same. And again, that's not to say that there aren't times where you can produce above your capacity. In fact, in the energy industry, I need to be careful with a conversation like this, depending on the audience, because it is important at times for people to recognize that they do need to go above and beyond. They do need to stretch themselves. They need to go above their nameplate capacity, if you will, to get the job done. I mean, that is what has made the energy industry what it is, right? You know, I wouldn't be where I was if I didn't push myself at times, and my team wouldn't have been where they are if they hadn't pushed themselves at times. So it's important to do that, but it's equally important to be conscious of when that happens so that you don't put yourself and those around you in an unsustainable position. And that's the goal today. Again, to make sure that when you're asking the question of somebody, whether they have capacity or whether you're answering that question, that you're conscious and that you're aware that, again, maximum capacity does not equal production. And so without going further down into the weeds, ask yourself, what is your default answer? And how do you phrase that question so that you make sure that, again, you're getting honest answers, you're getting thoughtful answers, and you're getting answers that don't, again, unwittingly mask the realities of what somebody can sustainably produce at a level that you want them to produce at, that they want to produce at. And that's it. That's the point. That's the goal today. So that, again, you don't have naysayers out there who are, you know, one, saying that, well, you're not producing up to your potential, when in reality, you are producing, again, a quality product consistently in a manner that is consistent with your ultimate goals. And conversely, you don't want people that see you as always trying to do more, when in reality, you shouldn't be. You should be you know, doing more with less, if you will, and producing a better outcome, a more, you know, quality outcome than what you're used to, because you're too used to taking on things that you shouldn't be. And again, to kind of wrap this up, I'll point to two recent conversations that I had with people, one of which comes from somebody who is in, or used to be, I should say, in the oil and gas space, transferred to somewhere else, new industry, sort of a refreshing change for this individual. And this person pointed out that they were asked more in, you know, the couple of weeks that they've been on the job with this new company about their capacity and how full their plate is than they had been in years prior, and how refreshing it was. And how, again, they were able to give an honest answer, in fact, kind of joke about the fact that, you know, one, again, they hadn't been asked as frequently as you would think they should have been in their prior life about their capacity and their ability to do more and whether they're at a good spot. But more importantly, they laughed at the fact that, and you know, on general and on the whole, in the oil and gas industry, we do operate above capacity, or we are, you know, operating with much fuller plates than is typical. And it's fine to realize that and acknowledge that, so long as, again, you recognize the trade-offs. And then turning to somebody else who has only known the renewable industry, a conversation I had about somebody who is overwhelmed and who, quite frankly, is him and the rest of his teammates are above and beyond capacity. Well, again, this individual shared that he sees problems. He sees ways for things to improve and for them to be more efficient and for them to reprioritize. But again, people aren't listening. They're not, they're not responding from a leadership standpoint. And, you know, he's growing frustrated. So obviously we talked about ways to address that and tackle that and to maybe avoid frustration for himself personally. But more importantly, the takeaway that I got, at least, was that, you know, it all comes down to what your perspective is, right? He recognized that what he was doing was unsustainable. Whereas people in the oil and gas industry who, you know, have only known this industry might not be able to see that, right? They might not be on guard. And again, you can jump in as a naysayer and point to the fact that, yeah, the oil and gas industry is made up of very special people who are hard workers and all of those things. And as true as that might be, the reality is it is important, whether you are an individual contributor or whether you're the head of a company, to ask yourself whether or not the relationship between the production that you're expecting out of your people and their maximum capacity is perhaps a little closer than it should be, is perhaps driving you towards an unsustainable approach to your business. Again, I continue to welcome your comments, your feedback on the Energy Detox, and I hope you have an excellent afternoon and a safe and enjoyable rest of the week.
To listen to the full-length interview, visit thecrudelife.com.
Telling me it's only a phase, and that soon enough I'll see that I'm crazy for loving you the way that I do. Because who could love somebody like you? They say you're too damn small, and I won't pretend it don't matter at all. But no matter what the trouble ahead, I still won't regret this time that I spent. Sad to behold, nothing you could do would make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know, giving me a heartbeat.
Folks, you are going to want to act today on this limited special from MyPillow. Check it out. A $70 pillow, now only $20. That's right. The standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. You'll also receive deep discounts on all the other MyPillow products as well. The MyPillow towels, the topper, the slippers. It is all on a deep discount with the promo code Otis. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and receive Mike's standard MyPillow for just $19.98, or call 800-598-4268. That's 800-598-4268. Once again, that thank you special is a standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. And do not forget to use the promo code Otis.
For more than 100 years, First International Bank and Trust has been headquartered in Western North Dakota, home of the Bakken. Our proven record of mineral management, appraisal, and brokerage services is now enhanced by the only Bakken-specific software, Mineral Tracker. Trust First International Mineral and Land Services and Mineral Tracker to protect your interests and help build and preserve a financial legacy for generations to come.